Hi, welcome to Pets and Power Introduces. Here I'm lucky enough to be with Phil Arakow, the coordinator of the National Link Coalition. It's the National Resource Center on the link between animal abuse and domestic violence. Phil, it's great to have you on Pets and Power Introduces.
Thank you, Jordan. Pleasure to be here. And by the way,
awesome.
It's not just domestic violence. It's the National Link Coalition is the link between animal abuse and all forms of interpersonal violence, including child maltreatment and domestic violence, elder abuse, and community violence as well.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for clarifying. So can you tell me a little bit more about the link? How did it get started and where it is today?
Well, this isn't rocket science. It's an age-old concept. It literally goes back hundreds of years with the concept that little boys who hurt animals grew up to become violent men. But it began gaining new traction in the 1970s when we started getting the first of what is now a voluminous volume of research material that documents this, that in fact animal abuse is linked with human violence. And what we say is that when animals are abused, people are at risk. And when people are abused, animals are at risk. And it's not just the impact on children who witness or perpetrate acts of animal cruelty, but it particularly affects the domestic violence situation where the animals are targeted and used as pawns in the mechanism of power and control that marks domestic violence. The animals are harmed or threatened if the woman asserts any independence or threatens to leave. And so she and the kids are forced to stay in this abusive environment for up to 2 years, as it turns out. And so they're living in this landscape of terror. We see similar things with the impact on children who witness animal cruelty. The animals are used as pawns to keep them under control in cases of child sexual abuse. We have issues with elder abuse, particularly with the animal hoarding situation. The impact of violent acts against animals, such as dog fighting, on people in the community. And we call all that the link. It's the area where these crimes are linked. And rather than thinking of animal abuse as a separate, standalone issue, it's time to start seeing it as just one more form of family violence, that they are all linked together. We're all dealing with the same perpetrators. We're all dealing with the same victims. We're all dealing with the same families. And we could do a much more, much better job, much more comprehensive job, if we all pool our limited resources and work together instead of thinking of animal abuse as an outlier.
I totally get it. I mean, as a domestic violence survivor myself, I've experienced this. So I'm so happy you're involved in this work. And is it? I do receive a newsletter. So it, right that there's a. There's a monthly newsletter that comes out through your organization?
Yes, we have a monthly free newsletter. It's called the Link Letter. You can visit our website at nationallinkcoalition.org and sign up for it. Just let me know where you're located and if you're involved with any organizations, just so we know how to place you in our database. You won't get spammed or junk mail or anything like that. But we've got almost 3,200 people now in all 50 states and 51 foreign countries who are working in this area, and they represent every discipline you can imagine: animal shelters, animal control, domestic violence, child protection, law enforcement, prosecutors, veterinarians, academic researchers, people working with seniors, human health professionals, you name it.
I love it. And in terms of the importance of pets in the lives of children and families, I've talked to a number of people, and they talked about emotional awareness that pets teach. From your experience working in this field, what would you say are the roles of pets for children and families?
Well, for starters, pets are probably the one common denominator in children's lives these days. We found that a child in America today is more likely to grow up with a pet than with a live-at-home father. So just think of the implications of that in terms of anything involving child development. Children
right.
are very likely to share their stories and their secrets, their anxieties and their fears with their animal companions, and children in abusive households are even more likely to do that. The animals may be a buffer for them against the chaos and the dysfunction that's going on all around them. And so the animals become their best friends and their confidants. So we have that close emotional tie. But unfortunately, many times children act out the violence that's been directed against them, and they turn that around attack the animals, or they will harm the animals as a way to, you know, basically gain a sense of control after they themselves have been abused. So it becomes a pretty complex dynamic.
I hear you. And is this part of how the link affects the domestic violence, child abuse, elder abuse, and veterinarians? I mean, are there things that we can do in terms of prevention and awareness?
The whole thing is about awareness. Well, we take four approaches here. It's a combination of awareness, you know, prevention through community programs, through the academic research that validates all this, and through legislation that's working in a number of key areas. We see the veterinarians as key players in this. We believe that veterinarians should be as proactive in the fight against animal abuse as physicians have been for 60 years now in the fight against child maltreatment. And we're getting veterinarians plugged into this through a combination of clinical data and programs to help them work these programs through their practice, through organizational policies, and through state legislation.
I love it. Is there anything else that people can do if they want to break the cycle of violence?
Yeah, just first of all, recognize that animal abuse can no longer be excused as boys will be boys or trivialize it by saying it's only an animal. It's serious. It's as serious as any other form of violence. And we need to, you know, step up to the plate early and stop it, because otherwise it just gets worse and it escalates against people. So we need to treat animal abuse seriously. And we need to integrate the animal care and control agencies in our communities with their human services counterparts. We need to set up community anti-violence task forces, anti-violence link coalitions, which is what we're doing, and get these agencies working together because, again, they're all dealing with the same families. They all have limited resources, and they can all do a much better job of preventing violence and responding to it if they're working together rather than in silos.
I totally get it. That's the collaboration is key. And is there a positive side of this? Can we use the animals therapeutically to help women, children, and elders who are at risk of this violence?
I have been doing animal-assisted therapy interventions since 1973, and I now teach several courses in it as well. So it's very well established that we have therapeutic benefits from putting people who are at risk or people who have been victimized in the company of calm, peaceful animals who are ambassadors from a calm, natural world. And we see this in the link in many different areas. We see it with abused children who have therapy animals come to them in children's advocacy centers to help them go through the difficult task of the rape examinations and the forensic tests and the detectives' interviews after they've been sexually assaulted. We have therapy animals that can accompany them into courtrooms when it's time for them to testify about the sexual assault that's been delivered to them inflicted on them. We have any number of programs working with juvenile offenders or youth who've been identified as being at risk, working with shelter dogs that are going to would be otherwise euthanized because of behavior problems. So we have kids with behavior problems learning positive reinforcement techniques and good behavior modification programs to train behaviorally challenged dogs. And guess what happens? The kids learn you don't have to be violent. The animals go off wagging their tails and find homes. And for the first time in their life, these kids are doing something. They see some success out of it, and they feel useful and meaningful. It's a real win-win all the way around.
Totally. I love it. It's heartwarming to hear. And at Pets in Power, we're all about preserving relationships that are healing and therapeutic. So I'm so happy that there's so many different sides to this issue. As we wrap up, how can listeners contact you and learn more about the National Link Coalition and stay in touch?
Visit our website. It's National Link Coalition. That's link, L-I-N-K, nationallinkcoalition.org. You can get all of our resources there. They're all free for the download. Lots of background information there, more details, links to a gazillion other agencies around the world working in similar areas. You can sign up for our free monthly link letter and find out more about what's going on. It's just, and all copies of the link letter are on the website as well, so you can see what it looks like and see the many, many dimensions of this exciting area.
Great. Well, Phil, thanks so much for being on Pets and Power Introduces. It was wonderful to speak with you in person. I've been receiving the newsletter for about a year now and love it. And thanks so much for your work and great work you do on behalf of pets and people.
Thank you, Jordan, and thanks for all you're doing to help protect the animal survivors of domestic violence.
My pleasure. Okay, thanks. And listeners, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.